Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Welcome to Ruthie's Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
I can honestly say that I've had breakfast, I've had lunch, and I've had dinner with Mary McCartney. The last time was breakfast. Mary brought her own porridge. Ruthie, you're going to love it. It has vanilla, it has almonds, it has pecans, and it has poached maple syrup plums. How could I possibly disagree? She also brought her camera to take a picture of us for her newest book, Feeding Creativity. My friend Mary is a filmmaker. She's a photographer, she's a writer, and she's a chef. She comes from a family of creatives who are passionate eaters, and she has continued the beautiful legacy of her mother, Linda, who taught her the importance, meaning, and beauty of food and cooking for people you love. I can't think of anything nicer than being with this incredible woman on a sunny Friday afternoon in June, talking together.
Wow, I'm just never leaving. I love you.
I know, we're going to stay for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. We've done lunch, but now we're going to have dinner.
But that was the only time I fed you, is when I brought you breakfast.
Okay, well, the tables are turned now. I'm coming over for dinner, lunch, and breakfast. What would I bring you for breakfast? I have to think.
But everyone needs to know, whenever we have any big celebration, I always phone you and I'm like, Ruthie, can you send me some of your tomato sauce?
And I do. So, Mary, you know the drill. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with the recipe that you chose and you had for lunch, and it is
risotto with zucchini flowers. And may I say, it was absolutely delicious.
Good.
Risotto with zucchini flowers. 18 male zucchini flowers, 6 small zucchini, 4 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 medium red onion, finely chopped, 300 grams of risotto rice, 75 milliliters of Pinot Bianco, and a handful of fresh basil leaves. Remove the stamens of spiky sepals and tear each flower vertically into 4 strands. Slice the zucchini into very fine discs as thin as the flower strands. Heat the olive oil in a large pan and fry the onion until soft. Add the rice and stir until the grains are coated with the oil. Add the white wine and stir. Add 2 ladles of vegetable stock and simmer, stirring until the rice has absorbed nearly all of the liquid. Continue to add more liquid in the same way. After about 20 minutes of cooking, add the zucchini and then the flower strands. When the risotto is ready, the zucchini should still have a little bite. The flowers will have disappeared and the rice will have a creamy coating. Add the basil leaves. Serve immediately.
My name's Sharm Winowen and I'm the executive chef at the River Cafe.
And I think she's brilliant.
Thank you.
Shall we talk about risotto? I just had, on this beautiful summer's day at the River Cafe, sitting outside, I just had the most beautiful courgette zucchini risotto, which was actually a plant-based one.
Yes.
And for lunch, it was super fresh.
Yeah.
Really, what I loved is here you're not shy of extra virgin olive oil. And I literally, it was so like the olive oil in it made it really glossy and really delicious and Moorish.
What we're doing now more is finding that some of the risottos that we would have made for previously in the last 20 years of my career, or 23 years, we always made risotto with only chicken stock or fish stock. We never ever made vegetable stock. But now it's like this, you know, vegans, vegetarians want to eat risotto. So previously, it was just no.
Yeah.
No, you can't have it. It seems strange, doesn't it? We use the whole zucchini flour, even the stamen, just to give you more, try and get a bit more depth of flavour.
Each bite had a little bit of a different flavour, which was good and surprising. It's like part of it was a little bit more bitter in a really interesting way.
Yeah, it's probably
parts of it were a bit sweeter.
Yeah, interesting.
So I fully approve.
And also, when you have this time of year now, some people, not everyone, might have the odd zucchini flower growing in their garden because we're coming into courgette season now, aren't we? It's really, you know, July, August, September. That's exactly peak season.
But as I say, I didn't realise it had white wine. That elevates it as well. Uh-oh. And also that just olive oil.
Yeah, the oil's good. The oil makes everything taste good. Secret ingredient. And it's really good for you.
If I had to pick one ingredient, it would be extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah. I mean, the average chef in the River Cafe kitchen is probably on about a bottle a week. I'm actually 75.
It was delicious. I want to eat it all over again.
And vegan.
Yeah.
You know, not only vegetarian, but vegan. Are you thinking more vegan now?
I am. I'm not fully vegan, but the book that I'm doing is. For instance, there's a beurre blanc sauce in the recipe book.
How is that? And tell me about that.
Well, exactly. I was watching Rick Stein's Cornwall series, and he made this amazing beurre blanc sauce. Mm. And I thought, I wonder if I use olive oil instead of butter, and I used plant-based cream instead of cream. Mm. And I used a little bit of cornstarch to just make it glossy, and then the mustard and the white wine. And it was incredible.
Was it?
So it's sort of this thing of experimenting. Yeah. And the more and more I'm doing it, the more surprised I am with how simple and delicious it can be. So that's why I'm exploring more and more plant-based.
It's interesting also, and we will come back to this because I want to really talk about growing up. But what you're talking about is replacement, isn't it? It's saying, can I do this instead of that? Can I add this instead of that? Can I think about where did this come from and can I find another place? And I think it's a way of cooking with a kind of rigor, which just says, you know, I'm going to really think about what I'm doing.
But my big challenge and also excitement of what I've grown into doing is this thing of I'm not doing it for other vegetarians or vegans. I'm doing it for people that are wanting to eat more, you know, reduce their intake of meat. So it's more like trying to win people over. What I like to devise recipe-wise is that you would almost eat it if you're a meat eater. Mm-hmm. If I get it right, you would eat it and then be like, wow, I had no idea.
Mm. We had such a great time with your dad when we did the podcast with him, and it was one of the earlier ones. Mm. And he told us a story about making a turkey out of macaroni and cheese. And I just thought that was hilarious and so touching. And tell me what it was like growing up in a house that cared so much about where food came from, about the ethics, about the lambs that they saw on the hill. Was it always vegetarian?
Mom and Dad came. I remember them saying, let's sit down, we want to talk to you. And they said, look, we've decided we don't want to eat meat anymore. So they were like, we're not gonna cook it anymore. But they were always like, it's your choice, but at home this isn't gonna happen. And we were so young.
How old were you when that
we were like, you know, I don't know, like young, like 5 or 6 or right. But I remember it. And it wasn't a problem because it was more of a problem eating out, but at home my mum was a great cook. Mm. And you talking about the macaroni turkey she did, the big thing is we always would talk about it. So we'd sit down and we would talk about food. So my dad was very clever. He was like, well, look, if we're not going to eat a turkey, what are we going to eat? Because we want to slice something and we want something at the center of the plate. Mm. So mum and dad would debate. They'd be like, well, what are we going to have? And mum was like, well, I could do this macaroni thing, and then we could slice it, and then we could still. So it all sounds a bit crazy, but that was the beginning of how it carries on even to this day.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do it with my husband or my family. I'm like, well, I still want to eat that. I don't want to ever feel like I'm missing out.
Missing out on what?
On, like, I don't want to be apologetic for, you know, I don't want to go to a restaurant and be like, oh, someone will look at me and go, oh, I'm sorry, you have to eat that. Yeah. I want it to be like, if we get it we get it right, somebody sits down and says, oh, I wish I'd ordered that and I have to eat this steak. Yeah. And I'm like, but also I'm not very judgy about it. I understand. I have tasted meat and I understand I would like the taste of it.
Yeah.
I just think because I've grown up this certain way, I've never considered it a food.
Yeah.
I don't consider it a food, but I know that's unusual. Although I didn't realize it was unusual till we kind of started promoting Meat Free Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reason I got into sharing recipes and then doing the cookbooks and the cooking show.
Tell me about Meat Free Monday.
Meat Free Monday is a movement, and it's great because all it is word of mouth. It's like, do you want to, for any reason you want, reduce? You know, we often think we can't do anything for the planet, and it's like quite overwhelming. And so what I love about the idea for Meat Free Monday is like, you can have one day where you don't eat meat or fish, and then you're not giving into that industry, so you can be like, I'm reducing, you know, the amount of water it takes to grow beef and all of those kind of things. So it's sort of like a really easy way of reducing your carbon footprint, or, you know, being kinder to animals if you want to. And I think when people start doing it, what I found is people suddenly, it sort of grows into your lifestyle, and also it makes us consider what we're eating a bit more, because sometimes we just eat without thinking about it. So basically, that's what happened. We launched Meat Free Monday, and I kind of was like, la la la, we've just done this, and you know, if people want to do it or not. And then I did at work, people would come up to me if I was on a photo shoot and be like, I love Meat Free Monday, and we're trying to do it with our family, but they're like, I really don't know what to cook. And that really surprised me, because I've grown up talking about food and like, what are we going to have on that gap on the plate if you're not having meat and fish? So then I was like, oh, okay, I can share these recipes. And that's what Mum did. That's why she did the cookbooks. Because when people would come to our house, they'd be like, I would eat this way.
Of course.
And she was like, here's a book.
Yeah, of course. First of all, the influence that you've had and that your family has had on not eating meat has been enormous. And I think now there's so many reasons why we don't and why people don't. It's to do with witness a hurricane in Florida, or witness the climate, witness animals who are fed hormones. There's so many witnesses. But I think what you did, what your family did, was to say that actually it could be delicious, it can be fun, it can be ethical, and it can be quite sexy.
You know? Yeah, so I like that.
Yeah. So it's starting at the very beginning. So you grew up with a mother who was a passionate cook. And there were four of you, four children.
Yeah.
And what were meals like in the McCartney household when you were growing up?
Well, they were homemade. Mum would really do the cooking. Like, growing up, Mum would do the cooking. Dad would help. Like, he's a good sort of, if you give him a job, like, can you chop this? You know, he'd do it meticulously. But Mum was kind of very much, she would describe herself as a peasant cook. It's like, go to the cupboard, find what's in there, and make something delicious with it.
Did she grow up with good food?
She grew up in America, like East Coast, New York and Scarsdale, and she grew up watching people cooking. They like had a cook in the house, and she would gravitate towards the kitchen. And but it was very much meatloafs and, you know, very 50s American cooking.
Yeah,
so in a way, that kind of went into her vegetarian cooking. It was, she often would say, it's like meat is often like how you flavor it. So it sort of stemmed from that. And so I would cook with Mum a lot. Then it sort of grew into us kids sort of helping her. And then in a weird way, in the end, we sort of took over a lot of the cooking and would say, like, what do you want to request? And, you know, she'd love a fresh pesto, or we had a lot of pasta and stuff. So then it's sort of like we carried on the cooking.
Was it all of you, or were you the kid that cooked?
No, it was all, it felt like it was a group effort. And then when I left home, I kind of had this choice to sort of, you know, suddenly I'd grown up in this family where I had great food. We talked about vegetarian cooking all the time, and this sort of joy of celebration of cooking. And then I went to work in London. I was like, oh, I wonder, as a photographer, and I was like, I need to pick my own food. So I sort of had like a tuna salad sandwich in my lunch hour, and I loved the taste of it. But then all I could think about was, like, I know how to cook differently. I don't need to eat this. And I was just thinking about that lovely tuna swimming in the ocean being plucked out. So it's like, unfortunately, my brain doesn't work. Or fortunately.
What about your grandparents?
I love it. My grandparents, well, we had... Well, I always considered myself half Liverpudlian, half American growing up. So my accent was this sort of odd mixture. Mm. So in Liverpool, it was all like going to the chip shop and chip butties, real comfort food, very simple food. And then, you know, the more New York deli sandwiches, pizza. Yeah. The minute we would get to New York to visit our grandparents, it would be like straight to get pizza.
But did they cook? Did your grandparents cook?
My grandparents, well, like when we grew up, we didn't. My step grandmother cooked a lot. So my mum's mum died in a plane crash in the early 60s, like the first big sort of Pan-American. So then my grandfather remarried. We thought of her as quite strict French-American woman, but what she did was my mum taught me all my more peasant instinctive cooking.
Yeah.
And then Monique, growing up, she was a little bit, it felt like children should be seen and not heard. But then when I became a teenager, we kind of bonded a bit more over her teaching me how, she taught me how to make pastry. She taught me how to make a souffle. Mm. She taught me how to make a patisserie apple tart. Mm. Mm. And so all of those things in my cooking now, I kind of use. So like in the new cookbook, I take Dame Judi Dench, my apple tart, but it's four ingredients.
Yeah.
So I'm not making the pastry. It's a ready roll pastry, thinly sliced apples, brushed with olive oil, and then glazed with apricot jam.
Mm. Back to the growing up. So your mother would cook, or would you have cooks with you?
Mom would cook. No, we didn't.
Would you sit down at a table? You presumably go to school every day, come home, and then you would sit down all together, or would people eat at different times?
We would kind of have the home-cooked meal. Maybe during school time we'd eat slightly different times, but generally holidays and like summer holidays, we would be in Scotland in this kind of beautiful but remote farm, or we'd go to Arizona in when Mum sort of went to U of A and then became a photographer there. Mm. So we would go to these places where it was just us. So it was sort of all of us cooking.
Yeah.
And we would sit down and eat. We didn't have like housekeepers and chefs and chauffeurs and all that kind of stuff, which I really value now because I know how to cook, and I was sitting literally with my family around a table talking endlessly about food and flavors.
Have you carried that on with your own children?
Yeah, and what I like to do is, because kids can be a little bit unsatisfying to cook from, don't you think? Mm-hmm. They can be a bit like, how many bites do I have to have? And then when you cook for friends, the same, they're like, oh, this is so, thank you.
Yeah.
But I found once I started getting the kids involved, then they're really much more excited to eat it because they'll chop things the size they like it, or they'll kind of put in ingredients. So I think it's important because when I left home to become a photographer, I remember making a stew, thinking it was exactly how my mum had cooked it, and it was really didn't have like the flavor. And I phoned her and I was like, Mum, this is just not working. And she was like, have you put celery and cabbage? Two ingredients I would never buy. And celery, like, is always the base of anything, like a risotto, a stew. So just those tiny little bits. She would make this amazing quiche, but it was like a souffle quiche.
Mm.
And when I made it, I was like, Mum, this is not this showstopper that you pull out.
Mm.
And she was like, it's the oven temperature. It needs to be higher. And I was like, just these tiny little bits of advice.
Yeah, people who I've talked to, so many of them have little books from either their grandmother or their mother. And I think, you know, they could get some of the recipes in a cookbook, but having those handwritten recipe cards, or being able, as you say, to phone up and get the hint, or it's a connection. It's a connection you have when you're eating it. It's a connection you have when you're cooking it. And talking to somebody about how they made it is so revealing.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Help helps is a maxim I believe in. We all carry around stress and hardship, and when we keep it inside, it starts to chip away. Therapy is a safe place, and therapy is for everyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie. BetterHelp.com/Ruthie.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
I'm always trying to myth bust this, that plant-based or vegetarian cooking is more ingredients, takes longer. So all of the recipes I develop, I try to sort of use the fewest ingredients and make it the quickest and the most easy, but also pleasurable. So it's not too many, you know, it's quite simple and enjoyable to make. Sometimes I question if some of the recipes are too simple, but I love a shortcut and I love make ahead, like prep ahead.
Yeah, because you want to enjoy the people that you're with.
Especially if you're having a dinner party, you can sort of make all of it, have it ready, or even make it the night before and then put it in to cook.
Is your kitchen connected to your dining room? Yeah. Is there a dining room in your house?
I have a dining table, which I also work at, and a kitchen.
Yeah.
It's quite important to me because growing up at home, my mum was clever that we would always gravitate towards the kitchen because if you're cooking nice things and you smell them, that's where you're going to go. And we had a nice, like I have a table in the kitchen that people can sit around so they can be doing homework or chatting or friends come over. If friends come over, we don't often move to another room. We always just stay in the kitchen.
It's nice to be in the kitchen, isn't it? Also, when you're cooking by yourself, it's quite isolating. And
exactly.
It becomes much more of a performance, you know. I was saying to one of our kids that that one of my sons made it. Really took a long time to make a zucchini pasta. And his brothers were there with their wives, and he brought it out. And they just ate it, you know, they're eating it. He said, wait a minute, guys, you know, what did you think of my pasta? And one of the girls said, what is it with you, Rogers and Praise? But the thing is that, you know, it is a response. Whatever we do, it's a performance. It's something we care about. And we do want to know how people feel, you know.
I actually think it's more, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. It's not wanting a response. It's like when you cook for someone, it's a real, you're really putting yourself on the line.
It's very exposing.
It's very.
Look how I feel every day when we cook in the River Cafe. You know, I used to say to Richard, you do a building and it's there for like hundreds of years and people drive past it and like it or not. I put a piece of fish on the table and I said, because we have an open kitchen, I can see the way people are looking and they go, no, or they go, yes. Or they take a photograph, or they don't. And you can see the response. And you're as good as your last meal. Really.
I photographed my risotto today.
Oh, did
and
you?
And I had, like, a beautiful... What I like to do here as well is get all of those beautiful... Like, I had the roasted red pepper and the bellotti beans.
Yeah,
and
the vegetables. Yeah.
Which is nice, because my husband always jokes I'm the vegetarian who doesn't really love vegetables. Because I will never be found eating like a piece of steamed broccoli. It's like I like a dressing, I like it in a soup. I'm like, it's
hard,
all about,
you know,
little
it's
flavors.
To cook, you know, to put, I say, if you're thinking about a dinner, because the way that I do most of the meals in our house now, I'm done with sort of second courses. So we have a pasta or risotto or a papa pomodoro. And then I just bring out the vegetables. You know, we have bellotti beans, we have spinach, we have peppers, we do have mozzarella, and sometimes I put a plate of prosciutto. But it's a lot of work, vegetables. You know, I do think if you take a piece of fish and you take a piece of meat and you put it on the grill or you put it in the oven, you're kind of done with maybe some vegetables. If you decide to have a meal with vegetables, it is time-consuming. You know, I love the time, but it is much more time-consuming.
I understand what you're saying, but I would actually... It's interesting, this book that I've done, the recipes, I've been really enjoying making the recipes because they're really quite simple. And I really think, I'm always surprised, like I've done this Caesar salad dressing and I have these torn sourdough croutons. Yeah, and when I put the crouton into the Caesar salad dressing, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I've made such delicious dressing. And my mouth started watering.
Yeah.
And I was like, this took me like 30 seconds to make.
No, it can be.
That's what I think about all the time. I'm like, how can I make something really easy? Like, I'll pick an ingredient. I often start with the name of a recipe, and then I'm like, now how would I make that?
Yeah.
Anyway, you can tell that I'm obsessed with food.
No, we are. When you left home, so you left your mom cooking for you, sitting around the table, and then you left home, what was that like? Did you have your own apartment and your own kitchen? Did you eat out in restaurants? Well, tell me about leaving the comfort of home.
Yeah, I moved to London. I got a job around photography, and it was about, I had an apartment, and I would cook. So I would cook, but it was all much more like pasta and, you know, just sort of not very simple kind of early 20s. It's more about going out and having fun than having people over for dinner parties. And then I think when I really, really got into food and cooking, as I said, was around Meat Free Monday, because then I was like, wow, I need to share recipes with people. And before I did it in my mum's style, I would just have my like things in my cupboard and I would make it into something. Whereas this was like, I'm actually going to write down this recipe and consider it. And that's when, and going back to what we're saying about this, it's sort of, you really put your heart on the line because you're sort of cooking for somebody and you kind of want to please them. So when, you know, you want something, as you say, you want to like, you can see when somebody takes that first bite, if they light up, it's just like an electric shock of joy. But that's why the Great British Bake Off is one of my favorite all-time shows, because it's the drama. It's like the cake can look beautiful, but if you overbake it for like 2 minutes, it can be dry and like a chore to eat. And it's just like the pleasure of feeding people, I think, is my main motivation.
Are you a pastry chef? Do you cook cakes?
I do, yeah. Yeah, like I can. I do. Well, as I say, it was my step-grandmother that sort of got me into that.
Yes.
And I like it because it's something I didn't grow up with at all.
Yeah.
We would have, like, my mum would make brownies, which was very exotic growing up in London, eating brownies, because that was before brownies were everywhere.
Yeah.
But other than that, there wasn't a lot of baking. So one of the best ever bits of advice I was given was to get an oven thermometer, and then baking became a joy.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, before that, things would be like not cooking at the right temperature, and it's like the oven tells you the truth. The oven thermometer tells you the truth.
I think that those, you know, that recipes are both poetry and science, and the uncertainty of when something's done, the uncertainty of how long to cook it for. As you say, if you have a thermometer, you learn. Sometimes you see, especially in these restaurant kitchens with the chefs that we touch it, we can tell. But Rose had this great thing of taking a skewer and putting it into the middle of the fish and then seeing how hot it was. And we all work out our times.
I have a skewer, special one for like cakes that I love, but I have to keep it hidden away because I have 4 boys. So I can't let them play with those things. I'm like, somebody's going to stab someone.
Do they cook?
They do cook, and they love me baking, like they love it. I don't bake a lot because I feel like I'm always cooking for people. Like, you need to cook a dinner or a lunch or a breakfast, but baking is like an extra treat.
Yeah.
And also, I love it. I've got these little glass sort of jars where it's like I put cookies in, or I'll make a loaf cake. But then I find that I'm the one going constantly, like I'm a real picker. I love snacking. So I'm like, I break a little bit of this cookie off and suddenly I've eaten the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
I know.
Baking is more, a special treat.
What do you have for breakfast apart from your porridge?
I love peanut butter jelly. That's my American side. I like making pancakes. But usually it's toast.
Toast, porridge.
I love porridge, and I've been making, I love it, the consistency I like. I've got this new chai pudding, chai seeds with coconut milk, and then a bit of vanilla and a bit of maple syrup. Mm. And then I chuck some pumpkin seeds in because it's sort of extra texture. And so it's super healthy, but you put it into a little container, and then in the morning it's turned into a beautiful coconut pudding. And then you can put all chopped mango or berries and nuts. And so it's sort of, my thing is I like to eat. Back when I left home, I am surprised by how I used to eat. It wasn't that nutritious. But now I'm about trying to eat. Everything I do is I want it to be, whether it's vegetarian or plant-based, I want somebody else to eat it and go, oh my God, I can't believe how healthy that is. And it's really satisfying.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you have feedback from the media industry?
No, I don't.
They leave you alone?
Well, they do. I'm not a, you know, I think it's interesting. I hadn't realised. I realised it because I work on my mum's, the Linda McCartney food brand. And I was there, launched it with her. And I didn't realise that the meat industry is like has millions and millions of pounds promoting it.
Oh, yeah.
And like the vet, obviously, vegetarian has zero. So, you know what, I don't, I really do honestly want to not judge things because I don't think, honestly, that from the research I've done into it, I don't think people forcibly made the industry, the food industry, the mess that it is now. And I really believe that it is a broken food system at the moment. And so what I like to do, and what I'm actually pleased about, is it feels like growing up, people are like, you're vegetarian. Do those shoes leather? Did you do that? Yeah. Like trying to beat me up. I'm like, I know I'm not perfect. And I'm not saying that I am. But now what's good is like we, it seems like we can have more of a conversation. It's like, well, I don't necessarily agree with you. You don't necessarily agree with me. But let's have a conversation and try and openly discuss how we can sort of maybe all help this broken food system.
Yeah. When you say broken food system, can
the
you...
The industry.
What is broken about it?
Well, like the cattle industry in America is not even farming. It's sort of they have like a central unit somewhere in middle America that has cameras to all different places.
Yeah.
And the cows are up to their knees in waste and they're not fed what they normally would be fed and the meat's becoming contaminated and... When it's contaminated, instead of going, oh, let's feed them grass or the, and give them more space, let's bleach the meat. You know, there's all these pretty horrifying. But what I do is I don't delve too much into that. I feel like my purpose is to be like, you know what? I want, I'm going to make your mouth water. I'm going to cook you something interesting. I'm going to be like, let's have something. Yeah, because other people are doing that. There's a really great documentary I love called Kiss the Ground, which I found really interesting because it's so positive and like I like things that give me a bit of a solution and don't make me too freaked out about the future. And it was just very much about soil health and what we grow actually on. You know, it's very sort of simple message. So I'm like, let's simplify. Try to create recipes with as guilt-free as possible. I don't like guilt.
We don't like guilt.
We don't like guilt.
No, guilt is a useless emotion, I think. It doesn't get you nowhere. And so in terms of restaurants, when you were growing up, would you go to restaurants? Would your parents take you to eat, you know, Indian food or Greek food? And would you go to cities where perhaps your father was performing and, you know, suddenly be in a place and think, where are we going to eat tonight? What did you discover from eating in restaurants?
We would eat out because we, growing up, Mum and Dad kept us all together as a family. So when they went on tour, we would go with them, which is why we all grew up so close together. We wouldn't sort of be left at home with other people.
Yeah.
So we would explore. And what I love is this, I think it makes you more open-minded, like, you know, trying Japanese food at quite a young age. I remember...
In Japan?
In Japan, well, actually, one of my earliest memories of Japanese was in England, in London, and we went for my sister Heather's birthday, and we were used to, we had a lot of sort of Chinese or Italian when we would go out, usually, and this was like a Japanese restaurant, and we ordered the seaweed salad, thinking it was going to be like the crispy Chinese, which isn't actually even seaweed, I found. And it was literally like seaweed from... we were like, this is literally... Yeah. But it was, you know, it's great. It really opens your mind. It wasn't the most delicious meal, but I was like, wow.
Did you ever work in a restaurant? Did you ever work?
I didn't. I would have loved to, because we were always traveling or we were away in the holidays, so I wasn't around. So, but my friends would be like working in a pub or a restaurant, and I always kind of...
Because I think you're someone who loves people.
Yeah.
And also you like feeding people. And so, well, maybe you'll have to come and have a job here for a bit.
Well, I had that beautiful morning
where you
I wrote you and I said, can I come and watch the, you know, the prep before service? And you invited me in. I felt so honored to be here. And I got to see why, I think that's why you and I connect, because I could see that it makes sense. Because when I come here, it's like it's a family atmosphere. And when I sort of say to my kids, when we have a special occasion, like for my mum, what would be my mum's birthday? I'm like, where do you want to go? Let's go celebrate her on her birthday. They will always say River Cafe.
Aww.
And they behave.
When is her birthday?
September 24th. Mm. And they always behave impeccably when they're here, which they don't do otherwise. But it's this, the way that you have everybody that works in the restaurant, whether they're front of house, in the kitchen, they all kind of help prep the ingredients, talk about the menu. So there's this real, and it actually, as we talk about it, reminds me of my childhood. It's you talk about food, you're around food.
And you do that with your children.
Yeah.
Do you remember, it was, I think, during lockdown, you said that your son was with your dad.
For his 21st.
And they were in Sussex, and you said, can we send them some tomato sauce and some pasta? And then they sent me a photograph. It's one of my favorite pictures of the two of them. So proud.
Well, you made his birthday, because it was lockdown, and he and Dad were together, and I was like, Ruthie, literally, they need some of your cooking.
Yeah. Well, food, as we talk about it, we talk about food being... as you've recollected, you know, memories of your beautiful mother and experiences with your father and experiences with your children and, you know, cooking when you feel that you want to celebrate or you want to give or share, but it also is comfort. So I suppose on this beautiful Friday afternoon and having talked about the risotto you had, I was wondering if you have a food that you kind of reach for when you do need some comfort, what would that be?
I am big into comfort eating. I really am. And there's one that hands down comfort food for me, and it's my mum's cream of tomato soup.
Tell me about that.
I actually asked her to teach me how to make it, and it was all sort of like, it was actually inspired by a lobster bisque. It's sort of this tomatoes and onions and celery, and she would cook it all down, and then she'd put it through one of those, what is it?
The mouli.
And then she would put cream and herbs in it. So I've kind of adapted and grown that recipe over the years, and I actually made it last night. And when I have that, if I'm a little flat or down and I have that soup, it just brings me joy and it makes me happy. And I had this moment years ago where I was like, wow, food really does do that. I remember being in a bit of a bad mood and having like tomato soup and fries and then ice cream. And then I was happy. And I was like, isn't that weird? But it's really cheered me up.
Yeah, it does. It does.
That soup is my sunshine.
Good. Well, you're my sunshine. I would have loved to have met your mother because she comes through as a person who just gave so much and created you. And I want to thank you for coming. And you are my sunshine.
Thank you.
The River Cafe Lookbook is now available in bookshops and online. It has over 100 recipes beautifully illustrated with photographs from the renowned photographer Matthew Donaldson. The book has 50 delicious and easy-to-prepare recipes, including a host of River Cafe classics that have been specially adapted for new cooks. The River Cafe Lookbook, recipes for cooks of all ages. Ruthie's Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chat with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast. Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.